Okay, here we are back. Just did something for fun here during the break. I went to Gemini and asked, what is the current condition of the Catholic Church? Before I read you the answer, let's welcome Father Paul Kramer back. Hello, Father Kramer. Thanks for being here.
Yes, it's great to be back.
What did you say? I'm sorry. I missed that.
No, it's great to be back.
Good.
I'm very interested to know what Gemini has to say about that.
It says, the Catholic Church is currently undergoing internal reforms initiated by Pope Francis, while many physical church buildings across Europe are being repurposed into secular spaces such as hotels, cultural centers, and apartments due to dwindling attendance in church and maintenance costs. I haven't heard about this one before, so they're taking church buildings and repurposing them. So that's the opening line. And it's actually, you know, this has not been updated. It goes back to Francis again. Pope Francis is leading a multi-year reform project aiming at making the Catholic Church more welcoming and responsive, though these efforts face internal debate. Some of the key aspects include synodality, a 3-year process to foster wider consultation and shared decision-making throughout the global church. Number 2, doctrinal shifts. While core teachings on issues like abortion remain unchanged, Francis has shifted emphasis and revised positions on areas such as the death penalty. Administrative changes. In Rome, the Pope ordered a reorganization of the diocese's geographical divisions to better integrate suburban areas with the historic center, aiming to prevent the city's numerous central churches from becoming mere museums. And then it goes into the repurposing of Europe's buildings. Let me read this. This may be interesting. A separate but highly visible trend is the conversion of unused church buildings across Europe into non-religious venues due to declining congregations. This is particularly notable in countries like Belgium, the Netherlands, and France. Common uses for these buildings include hotels and apartments. Yeah, for invaders, no doubt. Cultural hotspots, community spaces, libraries, supermarkets, and commercial ventures. A mushroom farm in a converted chapel in Nantes, France, for example. Anyway, so that's what it says. It obviously hasn't been updated. Well, maybe Leo hasn't done much to catch their attention, but that's what it says now in Gemini. Oh, here's... No, that's not worth mentioning. Here, this is a story. Pope Leo XIV faces limits on changing the Catholic Church. This is from May. Pope Leo faces limits on changing the Catholic Church, but Francis made reforms that set the stage for larger changes. True. Well, anyway, that's a little thumbnail sketch.
What's interesting there is something that Leo recently said, that the church cannot change its doctrinal teachings until the attitudes change. So that's a dead giveaway that this man is...
That gets him totally off the hook. What a scam. What a joke.
That means it is a central point of the Catholic faith that every article of faith is irreformable, unchangeable, because it's the apostolic tradition which the church received from the apostles. The apostles received from Jesus Christ himself.
Uh-huh.
So as Christians, we profess what Jesus Christ himself taught, and we receive it from the apostles, and it has been passed down through the apostolic succession down to our present time. And therefore, that doctrine can never change. So the fact that Leo speaks about the doctrine, in order for the doctrine to be changed, we have to have a change in attitude first. That's a dead giveaway that he's saying that the doctrine can change, which is contrary to the very essence of the Catholic faith. The man is correct. Not a Catholic. He's a heretic. He's a heretic. He proved himself to be a heretic right there in that.
I hear you.
Francis, of course, brought in his own wrecking crew to destroy the Catholic Church, but it has to be done in a way that it's not too obvious to most of the Catholic people that he's actually out to destroy, that he was there to actually destroy the church and replace it with a different church. Although he said his synodal church will be a different church. He didn't expand on exactly what he meant by that, but he meant it in a radical sense. That it is a different church entirely. It is not the church that was there before. But it has to be demolished in such a way, carefully, so that it will be done gradually and to the extent that it won't be grasped by the people.
Well, there we go.
This is a different church.
Yeah. Gradualism, incrementalism, yeah. The same old communist socialist trickery, same stuff.
And when the Prevost Leo talks about the changing of doctrine, when he discards the doctrine taught by previous popes like Pope Pius XI, the cooperation of the Blessed Virgin Mary in the work of redemption, where he basically trashed the whole idea of what is called the co-redemption, which was founded on the biblical teaching of the Apostle Paul that we participate in the work of Christ's redemption, not to take away from anything that Christ himself is the sole redeemer, but by his will, by the disposition of the divine will, he has given us a part as Christians to cooperate in that work of redemption of his. And it is through the merits of the saints that through the works of sanctification that we all are called upon by God to do our part to bring about the increase of grace in this world for the salvation of souls. But that was most preeminently accomplished in Mary, the Mother of God, because she, as the angel said to her, being full of grace, it was by her consent that we even have a Redeemer, because she's the one who gave the Redeemer to the world. She gave birth to him only by her consent. If she had not given her consent, we would not have Jesus Christ, the Redeemer. But Leo spits in the face of the previous popes and discards their teaching. This is unheard of. He discards their teaching, and then he talks about changing the doctrine of the church, and he has changed it. He has changed doctrines. He has taken that papal teaching of Pope Pius XI on co-redemption, and he said, no, that's totally inappropriate. So what Pope Pius XI taught, he says, is totally inappropriate. It's absolutely absurd. No Catholic would ever say that. And then you have, of course, he says like Francis before him, that the death penalty can never be justified. Well, in that case, you have to condemn the prophets, and you have to condemn 2,000 years of of Catholic tradition.
Well, that's the whole thing. Off with the old, on with the new. That's their game. Here's what it says. Go ahead. Go. Finish.
Bergoglio brought his wrecking crew, and to destroy the church, he carefully constructed the demolition crane, and he designated the man who calls himself Leo, who was Cardinal Prevost. He was the designated wrecking ball. That this man is the wrecking ball, and he's and he's proving it. He's proving it.
I asked Gemini, what has Pope Leo the 14th done? And it says, the Pope has started using more inclusive language, such as brothers and sisters and gender-neutral words in church prayers and liturgies. So his number one accomplishment so far, more inclusive language and gender-neutral words in church prayers. This is a sample acknowledgement. Let me start again. This is a simple acknowledgement that God's family includes everyone. The Pope has launched Green Vatican Initiative to make Vatican City completely carbon neutral by 2030. Okay. All right. Then I asked another one, and it says, Leo the 14th has addressed issues such as climate change, global migration. Global migration, Father Kramer, that's what the invasion of Europe is being referred to as. Just a global migration. Church governance and human rights, and expressed alignment with the reforms of the Second Vatican Council and the direction set for the church by Pope Francis. So there you go. Those are his accomplishments so far, according to Google and Gemini.
He is moving very carefully, but the signs are there that what he is going to accomplish and what he intends to accomplish is going to leave, he's going to leave behind himself a church that is unrecognizable to Catholics, because there will not, once he's finished with his work of demolition, they're already building the new synodal church, but they're carefully demolishing the vestiges of the previous Catholic church that they're trying to destroy down to its foundations.
Well, time seems to be on their side, doesn't it? That's why they're going slowly and meticulously. They're just, it's incrementalism again. That's the way they're doing it.
They think that time is on their side, but their time will be cut short.
Good.
And it will be cut short. It will be cut short in a terrible way, because it's going to be a world war that's going to cut short their time.
Well, I think we're on the verge of, obviously, major convulsions, which will point to a major war, or plural, wars. You're going to see war. I think what's going on in Washington among the Trump elite is that they're noticing all of a sudden that, gee, we're over there playing around in Ukraine. We've given them about $400 billion, almost half a trillion dollars. We're messing around over there, when in our own backyard, in Brazil, in Argentina, Chile, and so forth, communism and communists are moving in. Chinese communists especially, some Russian influence, etc. Certainly a lot of Jewish Zionist influence is down there. That's always the case. So I think there's an effort now being made by the Trump cartel, cabal, to take South America, certainly lay claim to South America, and try to push the Chinese and the Russians out. They're not going to bother the Zionists at all, of course, and that's just not on the table. But I think that that's what they're doing. They want this hemisphere, northern and southern, and they want it locked up. I think that's the game.
I don't think Trump is intelligent enough to understand what communism really is. Because
probably not. No, probably not.
Because what we had in the Soviet Union, Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, was not communism. It was socialism. It was called the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. Because in order, according to communist theory, the Marxist doctrine is that socialism is what is constructed in order to bring about communism. Now,
that's
the true communism.
That's the entree. That's right.
The true communism and what is theoretically communism are two opposites, because Marx, being a Satanist, was completely given over to the practice of inversion. So his idea of communism, the workers' paradise, the classless society where the state will wither away and the workers will have the power and freedom over their lives and over the world and over the means of production, and the world will be a paradise of the workers' paradise. Well, the real communism is the inversion of that. So what is the inversion of that? It's the absolute demonic tyranny, the devilish tyranny of hell on earth. That's what communism really is. And Marx wrote in one of his poems, I will crush humanity under the force of my enduring curses. That's the true Marxism. It means elitism. The people who created communism, the people who commissioned Karl Marx and Engels, were not the revolutionary party activists, card carrying Communist Party members stirring up revolt among the factory workers and things like that. No, these were bankers. These were bankers. These were elitists. These were the people who had the most highly concentrated wealth in the planet, and it remains
more
that way.
Years. Yeah.
And so that is communism. So what Trump is building in the United States, use the expression of William, I think, is it William Engdahl? It's full spectrum dominance. Mm-hmm. That is communism. It is not something about freedom. It's not liberating the working classes. It is full spectrum dominance. It is absolute tyranny where there's total control over the individual. It's total full slavery. Where you have full spectrum dominance, which means you will have a digital currency. You're going to have social credit. You won't be able to buy and sell anything unless you. You'll only be able to buy what you're permitted to buy. You'll only be permitted to buy anything if you are obedient to the potentates above you. If you show any signs of rebellion, you're cut off, and you have all the rights of a wild animal. You're going to be no one to help you. You're going to be out on the street and out in the forest, and you're going to be left to die. That's the freedom of that you will have. That's the option you have, is to either conform to the tyranny loaded down upon you, or else you can go out into the woods and die. That's freedom. That's the freedom that you get under communism.
Now you bow and you bend your knee, or you're out the door. You're gone.
That's right. So the true communism, as Marx said, he wants to abolish all countries. And interestingly, when he was asked, when Karl Marx was asked, why do you want to destroy all the countries? And he said, because Titus, in the year 70 AD, Titus destroyed my country.
Really?
Yes.
All right.
So the Jewish Judean state was crushed. What was mm-hmm. what was left of it as a mm-hmm. as a Roman province, Marx wanted revenge for that, and so he wanted to destroy all countries, because Titus destroyed his country, which is Israel.
Well,
what was left of it? What was left of Israel?
Where was geographically speaking, Israel originally located?
Well, in roughly the same place where it is now, in Palestine.
Larger territory, I think, right? Well, then it was bigger.
Oh, bigger! Yeah, it was bigger than the present day state of Israel, but. There is it corresponds geographically to the same area in that Levant. And
got it. Well, I thought it might have extended. Look, there's a real history with the Jews and Ukraine, and that's why they're running the country now. Zelensky, etc. It's another Jewish enclave that's firmly in control, and of the $400 billion that the U.S. has given Ukraine, not to mention what Europe has given Ukraine, etc., and maybe other countries, it goes without saying that Zelensky has looted the hell out of that money and is probably a mega billionaire right now, and he's not the only one. It's too easy for them to steal. That's too much money flowing in there. Every tranche of $20 billion, $30 billion, whatever, they'll get in there and they'll take 10, 15, 20%. They'll just take it. Nobody's going to argue it. Nobody. They'll keep the books flowing. They'll do whatever they want with the books. It doesn't matter. But they're all criminals. Just awful criminals. So anyway, Ukraine has, I think, a Jewish, at least the Jews think so, it's got a Jewish destiny. Not the Donbass necessarily, but when you think about that war and how the Donbass voted to join Russia of its own free will, 95% I think was the average, something like that. And the war has been going on for 3 years. And to this minute, the Zionist Ukrainian regime still has not been fully evicted from the Donbass. And they're fighting, arguably, one of the maybe the world's most advanced, fearsome military. Yeah, I know the Chinese are probably number one because of numbers, but the Russians are tremendous in their military prowess, their military brilliance, and their technology. And yet after 3 years, the Ukrainians, who have lost, getting on toward 1.5 million dead, are still holding on to parts of the Donbass. How can that be? That's crazy. You see, the Russians should have broomed them out of there long ago, you'd think.
The Zionist establishment will not give that up because of the resources that are there.
That's their plan. No. They keep saying no. We're not giving any of it up. Well, good luck. I think the Russians should just flatten the whole country. And I've said it before. If they want to stop the fighting and win the war, they simply give an ultimatum to Kiev, to... Well, I think Kharkov for sure, Odessa, maybe one more. And they give them 36 to 48 hours to vacate the cities. And then they just level them. But that's how you win a war. They have the tech. They can do it. You give the ultimatum, and the people will run. They'll flee for their lives. And that, otherwise, that the war is settled, and the Russians get what they want. They have never fully pleased many of the Russian people with the way that this thing is being conducted. It's too slow. It's just not achieving the results that it could. And then when you look around the corner at Israel with its Samson option, and you wonder why no Arab country has come to the relief and the aid of the Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank, there's your answer. Everyone's afraid of being nuked by the Jews. Anyhow, the war, after 3 years, is still not over in terms of expelling the Ukrainian military from the Donbass. That's a mind-blower in many ways, a head-scratcher at the very least. Go ahead.
I think Putin is a step ahead of everyone else in this. The reason why he's not going to flatten Ukraine is because he has a better idea, which is to take all of Europe. Because the NATO countries, it is the NATO allies that are waging this war against Russia and using Ukraine as a staging area to launch its attacks on Russia.
That's correct. Yeah, of course.
So it's like what MacArthur wanted to do in the Korean War. Don't just focus on defeating the communists in North Korea. The problem was China. So MacArthur wanted to go in and conquer and basically yeah. beat the yeah. get rid of the communists in China and overthrow yeah. communism in China. Yeah. That completely solves the problem. And that's what Putin and the Russian military establishment, that's what they have in mind. That's what they intend to do.
And you know what happened to MacArthur? As you know, all of you listening, most of you know, Truman, surrounded by communists in the White House, told him, do not cross the Yalu River. And MacArthur couldn't live with that. So that was the end of that. But he knew who the enemy was, just the same as General George Patton knew for darn sure who the real enemy was in World War II. He kept three divisions of SS ready to be rearmed to roll the Russians up, Soviets, the communist Russians, all the way, get rid of them. And he was murdered for that, as we know. So you got MacArthur, you got General George Patton. These are our great generals. And they know who the enemy is. Truman was a fraud. Just another one.
Yeah. Yes. It was during the Truman administration that they were able to bring about the communists to take over China.
That solidified it right there. Chiang Kai-shek? Yeah, for those of you who don't know, the non-communists who were fighting the communists there in Mao Zedong fled to Taiwan. That's how Taiwan came to be. The big Chinese island nation of Taiwan is formed on the heritage and the history of the nationalists, the real Chinese, having been driven off the mainland largely because of the position of Truman and the American military machine. We weren't fighting over there, but we put a lot of pressure.
Yes, that's an interesting period of history that people should spend more time studying.
They don't know. People don't know. They don't know. It's too bad.
The United States State Department was the most responsible organization for putting the communists into power in China.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't forget about our first Secretary of Defense, James Forrestal, right? In that same general period of time, James Forrestal was killed, murdered, 1949, after allegedly falling from a high-floor window in the hospital of Bethesda, Walter Reed. It did, no, they're claiming he suffered severe depression, anxiety. No, 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 no. It's all lies. Anyway, he was a brilliant man. He knew. He knew what was going on. If you looked, if you simply were around at the time of the FDR administration, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, there were communists all over the place. And if you want proof, read the book Major Jordan, J-O-R-D-A-N, Major Jordan's Diaries. That's actually his congressional testimony. I think it was in early 51, 52, something like that, where he explained what was really going on regarding communism and our support of communism all through World War II. It was amazing. It's a great read, and it's only 100 pages or something. Major Jordan's Diaries. It's a must-read. So, yeah, the communists and the Zionists that control much of this country have killed a lot of great people.
They didn't kill any Forrestal. I mean, an interesting fact that is perhaps forgotten by practically everyone now is when Senator Joseph McCarthy was on his feet walking into that hospital.
About Forrestal?
No, then also McCarthy. I'm talking about McCarthy.
Tail Gunner Joe, Senator Joseph McCarthy.
They did was they brought out a stretcher with an oxygen tent, and they put him in that.
His way into the hospital? I didn't know that.
On his way in, that's right.
Now,
the thing is, he was walking. He was on his feet. You don't take a man who's walking on his feet and put him on a stretcher in an oxygen tent. That's what they did with him.
They killed Joe McCarthy. That's right.
Yeah, because the gas that was in that oxygen tent was not oxygen, I can tell you that. That's rather well known for those who have really studied the history of the event.
Uh-huh. Wow. Well, there you go. I didn't know that one. That's interesting. Yeah, they kill people all the time if they get in the way. John Kennedy. I mean, come on, Bobby. We got so many people. This is all communism. And if you want to read about the Soviet communists and how they viewed America and the efforts they were making to overthrow this country, go on YouTube and look up Yuri, Y-U-R-I, Yuri Bezmenov, B-Z-M-E-N-O-V, Yuri Bezmenov. He was a KGB agent who defected, came over to America, and spilled the beans. He really did defect. And did a lot of videos of him being interviewed. And they're fascinating to watch, to see how the communists view us, and still do. Yeah. And remember Senator Joe McCarthy and the McCarthy hearings in the early 50s. He was looking for communists, and they were here. So it's all a matter of record, but nobody studies these things anymore. They don't teach them in school. They call McCarthy a lunatic, etc. They don't even mention James Forrestal. You want to go look at FDR's administration. I'm going to do this. Let me do this just for fun. How many... This will be interesting. I'm going to ask Gemini. How many communists were... obvious, how about that? Obvious in the FDR administration. Okay, let's just see. How many communists were obvious? While many people, this is going to be fun. I know where it's going already. While many people working in the Franklin D. Roosevelt administration held left-leaning, progressive, or radical views, the number of obvious Communist Party members in high-level positions was very low, says Gemini, though several covert Soviet spies were later identified. Let me rephrase that then. How many communists were in, I'll just say how many communists were in, not obvious. While there were accusations and concerns about communist infiltration, particularly during the Cold War era, post-FDR, no definitive number of actual Communist Party members in FDR's administration have been established. Senator McCarthy had a list of 205 names. I see what they're doing here. I'm going to try this again here. Let's see. How about actual? How many non-card-carrying communists? How about that? Because they're trying to say, well, they weren't members. How many non-card-carrying or non-members? Communists were in the FDR administration. Let's see what it says. It's taking its time now. The exact number of non-card-carrying communists or communist sympathizers within the FDR administration is difficult to determine. However, due to the clandestine nature of their affiliations and the destruction of records, few are identifiable. However, historical evidence, particularly declassified information from the Venona Project and scholarly research, confirms that a number of individuals who were secretly aligned with the Communist Party or acting as Soviet agents held positions within the federal government during the New Deal, FDR, and the World War II years. Aha! So there you go. That's the most we're going to get out of that. So there were a lot of them. Harry Hopkins comes to mind first, always does. There were a bunch of them. It was a communist-riddled administration. And read Major Jordan's diaries if you have any doubt about this.
So, communism is not always May Day parades and hammer and sickle flags. The world capital of communism, of course, has been New York.
A lot of Jewish Americans there with, shall we say, liberal leanings that qualify for that kind of designation.
So that is the true communism, as Rakovsky, in his interview, as we can call it here, when he was interviewed in prison in Moscow, he used the term the Kapintern as opposed to the Comintern, the Kapintern. The true communism is from North America, from the United States, from New York. That's where the true communism is.
Interesting. Well, I'm not surprised. New York is, of course, toast now. It's done. See how long it takes. You watch when this new mayor starts to make his moves. It's going to be pretty funny. Let's see. Have you been watching New York since the election? So-called election?
I've really not.
First thing Mom Donnie did was take off and go on vacation to, the hell was it? Puerto Rico. Yeah. Let me see if I can find one of these clips with... Have you seen Yuri Bezmenov? Any of his video clips? They're really good.
I haven't seen the clips.
Oh, they're good. Here. Former KGB agent Yuri Bezmenov warns America about socialist subversion. Yuri Bezmenov, the four stages of ideological subversion. The four stages of ideological subversion. How to demoralize a nation. That's a good one. They're all good. Let's listen here to one for a couple of minutes here. How to demoralize a nation. Let's check this out. All right.
Well, you spoke several times before.
Ideological
subversion. What do they mean by
that? Ideological subversion is the process which is legitimate, overt, and open. You can see it with your own eyes. All you have to do, all American mass media has to do, is to unplug their bananas from their ears, open up their eyes, and they can see it. There's no mystery. There's nothing to do with espionage. I know that espionage intelligence gathering looks more romantic. It sells more deodorants through the advertising, probably. That's why your Hollywood producers are so crazy about James Bond type of thrillers. But in reality, the main emphasis of the KGB is not in the area of intelligence at all. According to my opinion and opinion of many defectors of my caliber, only about 15% of time, money, and manpower is spent on espionage as such. The other 85% is a slow process which we call either ideological subversion or active measures, активные мероприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite of the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interests of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. It's a great brainwashing process which goes very slow, and it's divided in four basic stages. The first one being demoralization. It takes from 15 to 20 years to demoralize a nation. Why that many years? Because this is the minimum number of years which requires to educate one generation of students in the country of your enemy, exposed to the ideology of the enemy. In other words, Marxism-Leninism ideology is being pumped into the soft heads of at least three generations of American students without being challenged or counterbalanced by the basic values of Americanism, American patriotism. The result you can see, most of the people who graduated in the 60s, dropouts or half-baked intellectuals, are now occupying the positions of power in the government, civil service, business, mass media, educational system. You are stuck with them. You cannot get rid of them. They are contaminated. They are programmed to think and react to certain stimuli in a certain pattern. You cannot change their mind, even if you expose them to authentic information, even if you prove that white is white and black is black, you still cannot change the basic perception and the logic of behavior. In other words, these people, the process of demoralization is complete and irreversible.
Okay. A full generation, at minimum, 20 years, to bring up young people. Look at the curriculum that our American elementary schools, not in many states, but in many states that are not firmly allied with the Constitution, shall we say, they're teaching children horrible things, and it's not being counterbalanced or challenged by American patriotism and its ideals. It's just not. Education now, what you see happening, is going to come home to roost like chickens in about another 10, 15 years. It's incrementalism. It's gradualism. That's how they do it. They take time. Our schools have been disastrous for the last 10, 15 years. More than that, but you get the picture. So they put in the time, and then they reap the rewards. This country is, the next election, the majority is going to vote socialist. They've been brought up on socialism in the schools, communism. So I think that the midterms here in 2026 are going to be disastrous. 2028, probably worse. This country is near civil war. That's where we are. Go ahead, Father Kramer. That's Yuri Bezmenov. Take a listen to some of his videos. They're very good.
Well, the re-education system that we have in the United States is such that they have taken communism up to the next level. So they have rebranded, they have relabeled everything. So it's not even called communism anymore. And the people don't even know that they are spouting communism from what they learned in school.
That's right. That's exactly right. They don't know. There's another war on the mind of America, especially young America, and that war is a semantic war, meaning of words, how words are used to transmit ideas and so forth. It's bad, and young people now can't read or write well, can't do simple mathematics in this country. What is this next generation, which is just around the corner now, what's it going to be able to do? Nothing. It spends 7 hours plus a day on their smartphone or on their tablets or on their computers. It doesn't matter. And they're not a factor. They've been run off the road into the bush, and that's where they're going to stay. So you watch and see. Watch and see. There's not much to be done when the government is not out there taking care of this nation and its people. It has nothing to do with that. All this government does is send our money, our wealth, our military intelligence, our technology to Israel. They've stopped sending so much to Ukraine now, but that whatever the Israelis want, they get. One warehouse, Father Kramer, in New Jersey is processing 1,000 tons of military equipment, weaponry, munitions a week directly to Israel, right through that one warehouse. It's being flown over, C-5s and so forth. 1,000 tons a week. There's a lot of stuff every week, and none of that money comes back. They don't repay any of it. Never have since 1948. Anyway, that's a situation that is not going to change easily, if ever.
Well, the major accomplishment of the Trump administration is to transform the United States into a client state, or practically a colony of Israel.
Yes, absolutely. I concur. Netanyahu has allegedly been invited by Trump to make his fifth visit to the White House, and that could happen next week. The reality of it is Netanyahu probably had one of his seconds call Trump and said, we need to schedule another visit. I'm going to come over and give Trump more instructions. That's probably what's going to happen. Five trips in less than a year by Netanyahu to the White House. Yeah, so add it up. It's all there. I don't see any way out of this, Father Kramer. I don't. I don't mean to sound negative or defeatist. It's just, it's too insidious. It's too evil. What do you think?
The way out of it, of course, is going to be through a great cleansing of the earth, a chastisement.
I'm ready.
A great punishment, and it's going to be in the form first and foremost of the world war that's coming.
Yeah. All right. That'll cleanse it, hopefully. Thank you, my friend. Take care. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Right up.
Okay. Father Paul Kramer, and we will say good night. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy each day. Each day is a blessing. And make this a very special holiday season. It may be the last for many in this country. All right? Have a good weekend. You know where you can find us, and we'll be back live on Monday. In the meantime, the Rents Radio Network is up, and we have our programming running all the time for you. Thanks for being here. We'll talk soon.